This is the WGNS Action Line, talking with Rutherford County newsmakers about what matters most to you. Now, your host, Scott Walker.
Right now that time, 8:20. You're tuned to WGNS, and in the studio with us this morning, we have Dr. Mike Courtney from Branches. How are you this morning?
I'm doing great, Scott. Doing great. It's good to see you.
You too. And the full title of Branches is what?
You know, it's Branches.
Yes. Nothing else.
One of the changes in my life, I semi-retired. My son stepped in, and he's now the director at Branches, and just dropped the Branches Counseling Center because we do so much more than that. So it's simply Branches.
You know, in today's times, it seems like more and more people, I won't say they need counseling, but they may need counseling.
Yeah. And one of the things that, removing the counseling part from that, we do life coaching, we do medical weight management, we do things like that. I think it takes some of the stigma away, and it's a little easier for people to say, I'm going to Branches rather than Branches Counseling Center.
So. And you know, so many of those things, so many of those needs go hand in hand.
They do. Yeah, they do. We see people that are dealing with medical weight loss, and that creates self-esteem issues and depression. We see people who are comfort eating because of the trauma in their life, and we see people who just have lost direction, so they need life coaching. All of that's kind of, you know, it's usually one answer, just lots of different questions.
But what are some of the biggest needs today? I guess emotionally speaking, what are some of those big needs that you see?
I think there is a pervasive sense of anxiety. We you know, maybe starting with COVID, at least enhanced by COVID, the political unrest, we are so polarized, all of those things I think have created more than anything else just a basic anxiety that people are finding it difficult to catch their breath, to find a Sabbath rest, to use a biblical term, to find a Sabbath rest where they can feel at peace and have the serenity that we talk about often in recovery.
With all the social media out there, it almost seems that the more connected people get, the less connected people get.
You know, that's absolutely true. We know more about more people and know less about those close, intimate people that we are close to. So Facebook, TikTok, all the Instagram, all the different types of media things, all they have done is fill us with a lot of information, but taken away some of the very intimate information that's helpful to know more about close friends.
It's almost like on social media, people go there out of curiosity. They mm-hmm. start reading about other people, friends, maybe even family, things that other folks are doing. And then it just turns into, before you know it, you've been sitting there all day reading what amounts to nonsense a lot of the times.
Oh, yeah. And there's absolutely an addictive component to it. Facebook, like a lot of things like that, create endorphins, epinephrine, norepinephrine, brain chemistry that gives us some sense of pleasure. We get addicted to the endorphins. And so there's an addictive quality to Facebook or to just an online presence in general.
And sadly, you know, Facebook and all types of social media, it doesn't do away with or erase problems from our past that, you know, we're not dealing with them. We're putting that dealing with aside and instead doing other things.
Yeah. One of my favorite 12-step sayings is, wherever I go, there I am. I can spend an hour, 2 hours on Facebook, but I'm still the same person with the same problems, with the same anxiety, with the same depression, with the same issues. And so just masking that by mindless clicking is not going to solve the problem.
Individuals versus couples that come to you for help, are they all facing a lot of the same issues, or do couples face a totally different set of problems?
Well, I think, and you know, I tend to see, just because of my age and because I'm, you know, I'm old now, I get to choose. I tend to see more couples than just individuals. I think they probably face a lot of the same issues, but they are exacerbated by by the relationship and by that microscopic relationship, so that if I am mildly depressed on my own, and now I'm in a relationship where that is constantly seen, maybe pointed out, maybe criticized, then that is made even deeper. I'm anxious on my own. I'm not sure how I'm going to make it, what I'm going to do. Now I'm struggling with also taking care of spouse, maybe children. So it's even deeper. So I think it's probably the same kinds of issues, but it's again exacerbated by the relationship.
Now, years and years ago, you know, those who are maybe in their 80s, 90s today, years ago, they would take anxiety, depression, and kind of brush it under the rug and try their best to ignore it. But these days, that's not the case.
Yeah, and you know, I don't know that that was all bad. That might sound strange coming from a therapist, but I think there is a happy medium. I think that probably my parents, my grandparents struggled with a lot of things that they didn't have to, they could have found help for. On the other hand, back to Facebook, Google, those kinds of things, you know, we have researched every single possible personality disorder, so that many times people come in and they're diagnosing themselves to me when they come in. I always say a little panic and Google are terrible things. That's a terrible mix.
Yeah. And you're right. You do hear that. I mean, you will even be at a get together and you'll hear someone say, you know, I've got OCD. I battle with this.
How do you know?
Yeah. It's interesting to hear people do that, but yeah. Folks are doing it left and right publicly.
Yeah. One of my cliches that I say to clients when I meet them for the first time, I say, listen, I love you. I just don't want to spend the rest of my life with you. My goal is to get you out of here as quickly as possible. And I think there's some, probably not just in behavioral health therapy, but in lots of medical practices, there are some who would tend to kind of keep you in treatment for a little bit longer, for good reasons, well-meaning, for good reasons. But I tend to come from, as again, a lot of physicians or chiropractors or whatever, I tend to come from the school of thought that the sooner that I can get you back out on your feet, the better off you'll be. And quite honestly, again, in this day and age, we need healthy, productive individuals to try to solve some of the polarizing that's going on in our world.
You know, it seems like more people today, and like you said, anxiety, one of the big ones, but it seems like people are dealing with more problems, more issues today than they were, for example, when I was in high school.
Yeah, well, and I need to say to you that it doesn't seem like that long ago to me that you were in high school.
That's right.
it's all relative. It's all perspective. I think that is probably the case. Again, we keep coming back to this, but I think social media, just our level of information, is so much deeper. We know more. That's a good thing, but we know more about what we can be dealing with, what we are facing. But also, the knowing more creates a deeper level of discouragement, of fear, of anxiety, of panic. You mentioned OCD, some personality disorders that come directly out of this angst about our world. And you know, we happen to be in that season, which we are in every 2 years now instead of every 4 years, but in that season where the news is full of fear-mongering. What if this happens? What if this candidate's elected? What if we do this? And it just deepens despair that we live with.
And I'm guessing, you know, when I was in high school, we didn't have Facebook. We didn't have social media. Today we do. So maybe that's part of the whole thing. You know, it feels like there's more problems out there only because we're reading about more problems out there.
Right. We see them. We see them faster. We, you know, it's 24-hour a day. I remember watching the news from 5 to 6 or 5:30 to 6 every night, and that was it. If you didn't get it then, you had to wait till the next day to hear what the news was. Now we're on 24-hour news cycles. We're constantly being inputted with all that's going on, and so I think it's only stands to reason that the collective blood pressure is going to be going through the roof.
Good point there. A good analogy. Yeah, it is going through the roof.
Yeah.
You know, when you look at the different issues that people have that may lead to anxiety, may lead to depression or you know, whatever else you want to call it that happens. But when you look at the underlying problems, what are those underlying problems to look at that lead to things like anxiety?
Well, one of the places to start with that, I think, is an understanding of what of reality, of what's true, an understanding of truth. Again, here's another biblical reference, but you know, Pilate said to Jesus when he was being tried, "What is truth?" And I think that question has become so pervasive in us that we have a difficult time finding a place to be grounded. We don't know where to start because we're not sure about truth. I think very quickly, I think there's developed these three levels of understanding truth. Originally, we had this, what some philosophers would call correspondence theory of truth. If I said something, there had to be a corresponding reality. If I say to our listeners that you have on a green shirt and they come in here and you have on a red shirt, then what I said was not true. If you have on a green shirt, what I said was true. So there's this corresponding level to reality. We moved past that to a coherent theory of truth, which simply says it just needs to make sense. You know, it makes sense to me that Facebook is causing more problems. I don't necessarily have any facts. I don't really know, but it just makes sense. So that must be truth. If it just makes sense, a little less grounded, a little less safe in my thinking. And then we move from that to what now I think we live in a pragmatic level of truth that just says, if it works for you, it's truth. If it works for me, it's truth. And that's all that matters. So I always say to people, you know, when you go out here, you stop at a stop sign, you see a tractor trailer truck coming down the road, you say, you know what? It's their truth that he's heavier and faster than I am. That's not my truth. Just go ahead and pull out in front of that tractor trailer truck and see how that works for you. But I think the loss of that grounded truth of knowing this is what I can count on has created the platform for so much fear and so much anxiety. In your field, Scott, I remember, and perhaps you do, I know your dad does, but I remember Walter Cronkite signing off the news every night saying, "And that's the way it is." And you knew that's the way it is. But in this day and age, we don't have that. We don't trust government. We don't trust the church. We don't trust media. We don't have that grounding truth. And it just makes us ripe for fear.
And with all of this distrust that we have maybe underlying somewhere in our minds that, you know, I would guess that makes it hard to seek help because you may not even think that you can trust the doctor, the counselor, or whoever it is you go to.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the, in my now more than 20 years of doing this, one of the big changes that has happened is that people would come to see me early on with a built-in level of trust. You know, I'm here to see you. They might not agree with me initially if I say, well, it feels like you're struggling with depression or it feels like you have some anxiety going on. They might not agree with me, but there was this level of trust. One of the things now, I think for every counselor, doctor, media person, anybody, the very first thing you have to do is establish trust. You have to develop what we would call in my field a therapeutic relationship where there is this, I'm willing to depend on you to some extent. So yeah, it makes it first of all more unlikely that people will seek help, but secondly, when they do, less likely that they will actually count on that person or depend on that person until they've had an opportunity to establish some trust.
Again, Dr. Mike Courtney with us this morning from Branches here in Murfreesboro and multiple locations, in fact.
Yes.
When you look at someone with a diagnosis of, let's say, bipolar disorder or schizophrenia or whatever it is, those disorders usually arise or present themselves for the first time, even though you may have always had it, just underlying and never really disturbed.
Right.
But those problems come from somewhere. In other words, I guess you could go through all your teenage years and then all of a sudden some big traumatic event happens and then that's when you suddenly have that diagnosis of schizophrenia.
Yeah, I think some of the things that we are talking about are generalized emotional struggles, anxiety, fear, even depression, some level of depression, those kinds of things. When we begin to talk about personality disorders, they are deep-seated and settled either in a chemical deficiency. There's something going on in my brain that is not producing enough oxytocin, and I'm not able to connect, relate the way I need to. Or, as you said, trauma, a deep wound, a traumatic event. I often liken it to this. I cut my arm, you know, and I go in, I clean it up as quickly as I can, put some mucircomb on it. Speaking of old people, I don't know if that even exists anymore. Put that on it, put a Band-Aid on it, and I'm okay. There may have been a few germs that settled down in there that I don't even know. And quite honestly, for a long, long time, they don't impact me at all. But then I get sick, I get a weak, my immune system gets a little deficient. Then that flares up to create a difficulty, a wound, and I have to go to the doctor and have it lanced or something. I'm getting far more gross in this.
It sounds painful.
Than I meant to. I think the same thing is true, that in trauma, there's something that settles down in there. And I may very well learn how to cope with that and live with that for a long, long time. But at some point, something comes up, either a specific event, a specific situation, or just life in general begins to take its toll. And those things begin to rear their ugly head. And as you say, I may have been bipolar for years and years and years, but I coped with it until now. It's finally come to a point where I recognize this is not manageable anymore.
Are you seeing more cases of things like bipolar disorder?
That's a good question, Scott. I don't know that we are seeing more. I think we're certainly seeing more depression, you know, more anxiety, those kinds of things. I think perhaps this is anecdotal. I'm thinking of stories rather than statistics and facts. But I think that perhaps when we do see them, it seems to be more severe. Probably because of some of what we just talked about, a lack of trust or suspicion of help in general. People have waited longer to come. They also are more what we would call, there's more comorbidity, that one diagnosis is now attached to another diagnosis. My marriage is failing. I'm dealing with a drug addiction. And I'm bipolar, and all of those things are connected. I think we tend to see more of that than perhaps years ago.
That's a lot of stuff to deal with all at once.
Yeah, it really is. And again, not to cast all the blame on social media and that kind of thing, but that is also, you know, I can get pretty good medical advice on Facebook.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of
from
it.
Somebody who knows absolutely nothing that they're talking about, but it keeps me for a while from going to see the doctor and getting the help that I really need. And so I think people tend to go longer. They tend to wait. They tend to let stuff build up because they've got other sources.
When someone posts onto social media, you know, hey, I'm currently going through such and such, and I think I have, and then fill in the blank, that, you know, the same problem existed 30 years ago. It's just that problem existed in conversation only 30 years ago, and today it's posted publicly for all 500 of your friends to see.
Absolutely. And the person on the other side of the computer who I don't know well and whose face I have never seen, for some reason seems so much smarter than that really good friend that I go to coffee with every week. So I've said often about myself, they'll fly me across the country to talk about something that people in here in town won't walk across the street to hear me talk about.
Just distance, true.
Distance creates this expertise and this professionalism for some reason. And so we tend to do that with social media as well.
And with that expertise, you know, when you're sitting down, having your cup of coffee, reading whatever stuff you read on social media, it's a lot easier to sound more intelligent when you're typing something out because you can go back and make corrections.
Oh, yeah.
As opposed to literally saying it out loud to somebody.
Yeah, I always say I am the smartest person in the world 24 hours after the fact. I can always go back and say, oh, yeah, I should have done this. I should see it that way.
It's, you know, social media is extremely deceiving. Mm-hmm. You know, and when you look at, like what you're talking about, somebody on the other side of the world commenting on whatever problem you just posted you had.
Right.
But it's deceiving because that person on the other side of the world really doesn't have a clue, more than likely, as to what's going on in your mind, as to what you may be going through other than what they read you posted.
Right. My mother passed away several years ago, but she had so many online friends, and she would tell me about this great advice that her friend gave her, and so I said, Mom, you know that you're talking to a 12-year-old boy who's sitting there reading a Superman comic book,
yeah,
and wasting time on his iPad. You know that's who's giving you this advice.
you know this is true in so many categories. You know, the person you think you're talking to is not the person you really think you're talking to.
Right.
And that it goes with marriage too. You know, the person you think you met online or maybe at a bar, I don't know where you met, they may not present themselves the same way a year later, 2 years later.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. And again, one of the things that the in-person, face-to-face connection can do is it gives us the impetus to work through those things.
Yeah.
Quite honestly, if there's somebody online that disappoints me, I unfollow them or unfriend them or block them or whatever it is that you do. But when I have that, you know, Scott and I have been going to breakfast once a week for the last 5 years, and now all of a sudden he's disappointing me. Well, I'm motivated to work through that. Let's see if we can't make this better. And that's then doubly true in marriage relationships or those close connections.
And you know, these, what we're talking about here is also true with your group of friends, with your coworkers.
Yeah.
I mean, it's true in every category. The person who you first meet down the road, you know, they may not prove to be the best worker a couple of months later.
Right. Yeah. I love to quote the Bible verse that says, where two or three are gathered together, somebody's going to be a pain in the neck. and that really is true. But there's something about working through that. It's healing for me. My anxiety, my fear, my depression finds healing when I am willing to pay the price to stay connected, to work through, to say, hey, you matter enough to me. This relationship matters enough to me. I'm very disappointed in this. Let's figure out a way to get through that. That not only helps the relationship, there's a healing that takes place in me when I do that.
Now, when you make that decision, you know, I'm gonna keep you as an employee. I'm going to continue to be your friend, whatever it is. But when you make that decision and say to that other person, you know, I know maybe you may be struggling in this way or that way, but I'm going to stay right here and help you out any way I can, or you know, I'm going to keep walking with you, so to speak. You talk about that having an impact. How big of an impact does that have on the person who may be going through whatever trouble they're going through?
Yeah, to be believed in. I always say everyone wants to know and be known. They want somebody that knows them well enough that they see the value in them, the worth in them, when no one else sees it. Maybe when they don't even see it in themselves. So I think that is huge. Again, I know we keep circling back, and I don't mean to keep circling back, but you don't have that with Facebook. You don't have that with an online relationship. But that is huge, or you very seldom have it. It is possible, but you very seldom have that. It is huge to have those, and quite honestly, in our life, there's probably not more than five or six, but to have those five or six people that believe in me enough that they're willing to stick with me and stand beside me in these very, very, very difficult situations. Esther Perel wrote a great book called The State of the Affair, and she said, everyone wants to be the gleam in someone else's eye. And everyone wants to be so valued, so important, that somebody, I can see in you that you see that in me. Nothing brings greater healing and wholeness than knowing that there's somebody who sees the good in you.
We're going to take a short break, and then we'll be right back. And again, Dr. Mike Courtney with us this morning from Branches. So stay with us. Time right now, 8:46. We're broadcasting out of the Middle Tennessee Electric Studios. Middle Tennessee Electric, serving to make life better since 1936.
Hey, this is Dan with Music World and Drummer's Den. Come in for your guitars, keyboards, drums. We have you covered. Our prices will normally meet internet prices. We also have PA and DJ equipment. Some lights, yes, we have that covered too. You can come rent a PA and sound system, do your karaoke, and bring it back. Come see us at Music World and Drummer's Den, the one-stop shop where you have everything that you might need. 2762 South Church Street, right across from the golf course.
Residents enjoy Adams Place.
At Adams Place, they have different things, entertainments, and things that you can get out and keep your mind going.
We're talking with Helen Alexander.
And that's what I like about Adams Place. I think most, although the food, I am very blessed to be here at Adams Place.
Hi, this is Terry Deal at Adams Place. Call me for more information about Adams Place. Phone 615-904-9111. Adams Place.
We're excited to announce that Capstar Bank is now officially a division of Old National Bank. The friends you've made while banking right here over the years are still here, and so are those delicious, warm, homemade cookies. Everything you enjoyed about Capstar is still at Old National Bank.
In Murfreesboro at 2230 Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard.
Come on over and enjoy warm cookies with friends while doing your banking at Old National Bank.
Old National Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
We'll see a few scattered showers and thunderstorms at times this afternoon. Partial sunshine develops, a high around 90. Tonight, chance for showers and storms, a low near 70. I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki on News Radio WGNS. Currently, it's 72.
The Action Line on FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna. Listen and watch at WGNSradio.com.
Right now that time, 8:48. With us this morning in studio, we have Dr. Mike Courtney from Branches, and we've been talking pretty generalized stuff here. I guess a little bit of everything.
Yeah, it's been good, though. I'm talking about anxiety and depression and where we are as a people.
You know, before that last break, we were really focused on how folks, if somebody just came along and said, hey, you know, I understand you're going through this. Maybe I don't understand it, but this is what you're going through, and I see enough value in you to stick by your side, and you can talk to me if you'd like, or you know, just continue the path you're on. Let's just talk more often. But that whole feeling of letting somebody know they're wanted, they're valued, is really what life's all about.
It really is. And again, I tell people very often, Scott, I'm the most selfish person in the whole world. For those who don't know, my own story of helping people comes out of my failures and my life of addiction and finding healing from that. And for the last 20 years, I have worked on my own recovery by trying to help other people by helping them to know that they are valued and they have worth and that kind of thing. So I think it's obviously great for the recipient to know that you believe in me, but it does something for me to be able to help people, to believe in them, to get my, if nothing else, to get my eyes off of myself and focus on what I can do for other people.
You know, it's kind of like volunteering to maybe go serve food to those who can't afford even the cheapest of meals. But there's something to be said about volunteering to help out because you are helping somebody else. It does helps you.
Yeah. You think you're going, I'm going to go and help these people and make a big difference in their lives. You think that's true, but you go away, you were the one that was blessed. You were the one that's helped by that. So yeah, I think that's right.
And amazingly, it could be that person you're helping who says just one thing that, you know, turns your focus around.
Right. It's been a while now, I'm going to be honest, but early on, I spent a lot of time in 12-step rooms and in recovery rooms. And one of the things I learned right from the beginning, an old timer said to me, there's somebody in every room that has something important to say to you. And I started going into relationships and into those food kitchens and helping people, saying, this is not so much what I'm doing for other people. What is there here for me? What is somebody saying to me? And you're right. Every time somebody with no teeth and, you know, tape on their glasses and all that, but they will say the most profound thing, and I will say, man, that was exactly for me today. That's what I needed to hear.
you know it's interesting because sometimes those who may be homeless, even,
mm-hmm.
they have lived often a life that is far more colorful than we've ever lived.
Yeah.
But with that colorful life comes a lot of trials, a lot of things they've been through that maybe we haven't been through, but their information can help.
Yeah,
because,
that's right.
Because they have been there.
You used to, do you still do this? You used to take amazing pictures of homeless people, and every time I would see them, you were able to capture a depth and even a wisdom in those wrinkled faces that I thought, man, there's always more there than you think if you'll just take the time to look deeply and to listen carefully.
Yeah, I still do some of that, but you're right. I mean, there is always something there, something deeper than what we see on the outside.
Mm, yeah. And part of the reason that we don't do that, we don't take the time to do that, is because of our own issues, our own struggles. We are too busy listening to our own problems to hear the problems of people around us.
How do we make a decision on which way to go when it comes to politics? Because you're looking at different candidates, no matter what the race is, you're looking at different candidates, and you're never getting that bigger picture as to who they really are.
Yeah, I believe that we have become so invested in sound bites and in media appearances and in screen time. We've become so invested in that we do find it hard to go beyond the persona, either the persona that's presented either intentionally or sometimes negatively, that the other side is saying this person. I try, as I do in a counseling situation, if I'm counseling with a couple, I will say to them, listen, I need you to know, I believe both of you. Even though you're telling opposing stories, I believe both of you. And I don't believe either one of you. I'm kind of trying to dig through. There is some truth in there. And so much of that approach I try to take when it comes to the political environment that we're in now. There is truth on both sides. I don't imagine that anybody is quite the blithering idiot that the other side tried. You know, they wouldn't be where they are. They wouldn't have accomplished if they didn't have something to offer. On the other hand, I also don't believe every promise that comes out of everyone's mouth. And so I think to try to listen, to discern, there's some communication skills that make it difficult to be heard and to hear in a relationship that I also think they come about here when I'm having a political conversation and I'm involved in all or nothing thinking. You either have to agree with me or we have nothing to talk about. That's not helpful. That doesn't create a good... When I'm doing mind reading, when I'm saying, well, I know what you're saying, but that's not what you really think. I'm going behind that. That's not helpful. That doesn't make for a good marriage. It doesn't make for a good political discussion. When I'm jumping to conclusions, my wife starts telling me a story, and I say, you know what? I know where you're going with this. You know, from being married, that's not helpful in marriage. It's also not helpful in a political discussion. And when I'm labeling, I just immediately, oh, well, if you're saying that, you must be one of them. You must be a Democrat. You must be a liberal. When I'm putting a label on things, it's not helpful. So I try in this political arena not to do those things, to be attentive, to listen, to lean in, to ask questions, to not assume, to not offend or be offended. Sometimes someone will say something to me that's just, man, that just, but can you tell me more about that? I think if we somehow in the public arena could try having conversations like that, we would begin to understand one another better and then perhaps make better decisions when it comes to actually choosing the right candidate.
Again, Dr. Mike Courtney with us this morning from Branches. You know, it's hard sometimes to not be offended at things.
And, right.
And especially, well, going back to social media, it's so easy to type out your response to something that offends you that somebody else posts. And people will do that day in and day out, and they sound very angry. But then when you meet them in person and they bring up that similar or same subject, you don't respond to them the same way. You don't respond to them with an attack on them like you would on social media.
Right. Yeah. And again, that the anonymity of the social media allows us to do that. And in some ways, you know, tying these two things together, the anonymity of the political arena that we are, you know, you're a Republican, I'm a Democrat, we're battling from those two places. And if we were just two people sitting down having a cup of coffee, we wouldn't be like that at all. So getting past that and recognizing that there's a real person on the other side of this conversation, whether it is face-to-face or on Facebook or whatever, there's a real person, and trying to understand that, I think, is very helpful. One of the things, I have a great friend, Jonas Beiler, who says, my response is my responsibility. And so one of the things that I try to say is, you know, however you meant this, whatever you meant to say, as offensive as that may sound like, my only responsibility in this is how I respond. And I choose not to respond in kind, not to be offensive, not to be angry, not to do those kinds of things. So how I respond has a lot to do with how well that conversation is received.
Is it important to, I don't know, keep quiet during certain things that irritate or make you mad as opposed to lashing out? Or is it better to lash out? I know lashing out is probably never the right choice, but if you're unable to give some kind of response that makes sense in a way that doesn't sound angry, you know, that's obviously the best route to go if you have to make a statement.
Yeah, I don't think we do ourselves or our country or our community a service by being quiet, by not doing anything. So, I jotted down two or three things that I think might be helpful. First of all, tell the truth. You know, don't get caught up in the hyperbole. Well, you know, so here's a bigger story. You tell me a story, I'm going to tell a bigger story. Just tell the truth. Second is watch your tone. There's so much, watch your tone, watch your facial expressions, watch your body language. There's so much aggression that can come out. That's why texting and online presence is so difficult, because I can't read tone. Watch your tone. The third thing is guard your heart. I mean, just as I feel myself beginning to Scott makes me so mad, I feel myself beginning, just take a deep breath and guard your heart. Listen. Just take the time to listen. Don't be repetitive. Don't just, we try to just shout one another down with the same thing. And then seek to stay grounded. Seek to say, okay, this is what I believe is true. I'm going to I'm going to stay grounded in that and not get off on these tangents that we have. I kind of jotted down it. When I value the relationship more than the result of this conversation, then there's going to be a positive outcome. We're going to come to a good place. We may not agree, but we're going to be healthy in the way we've responded.
Dr. Mike Courtney with us from Branches, and we're already out of time, but the website for Branches is what?
www.branches.org, O-R-G.
Easy enough. Well, thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you, Scott. It's always good to be here.
Time right now, 9 o'clock. This is WGNS.